It was some 23 months ago, while the war was still at its height, that the BBC announced that within 90 days of whenever the war with Germany ended, it would revert to a regionalised home service and would start a new light programme. It also said that 9 months after that, that's to say 1 year from the end of fighting in Europe, a new third programme would be introduced, provided wavelengths could be found. The first part of the timetable was kept with 8 days to spare. I don't think it's still sufficiently realised what an undertaking that was. Had the wavelength position been simple, it could be held that with the second part of the assignment, we're 4.5 months late. But the wavelength position has been, and is, anything but simple. When one considers what a host of difficulties have had to be overcome, I think it can be claimed that the BBC's undertaking has been kept. The three programmes of the BBC, which will from tonight be available to listeners in the United Kingdom, form a concerted and coordinated plan of broadcasting. And before speaking in detail about the third programme, it may be useful to say something about the BBC's programme policy as a whole. BBC programme policy is founded on three basic conceptions. The first is that the BBC has, through its constitution, not merely an opportunity, but also a duty to cater for all classes of the community, taking reasonable care of minorities as well as majorities, and using its privileged position to ensure the fairest possible allocation to all kinds of information, culture, entertainment, and art. The second principle is the duty of the BBC to hold fast to values. The third basic conception is that the BBC has a duty to the major musical, dramatic, and literary repertoire. This duty is, of course, primarily one of performance, but it's an obligation not always understood. It's not enough for the better known and more popular works of the great masters to be broadcast with varying degrees of regularity. There are many great works, some of them the greatest, which escape public performance for long stretches of time and tend to become mere titles. The BBC can ensure that this doesn't happen. Great masterpieces, however unfashionable or unhackneyed, should be offered at recurring intervals to listeners for reappraisal. The whole history of the great expansion in the popular appreciation of the arts through the last century and a half shows the necessity for this. The discards of one generation have more than once been the discoveries of the next. The three programmes we're now providing will each make its contribution to these basic conceptions. They will, of course, also fulfil many other functions. They will continually search for what is significant among the new. They will adventure, and they will innovate. They will endeavour between them to cover the whole field of material open to broadcasting. But they won't forget that millions of listeners want just entertainment. That's not a want to be ignored or despised. Because we couldn't carry out this fundamental policy without one new programme, designed on an entirely different plan from the two others, fears have been expressed that the coming of the third programme will mean the segregation of all cultural material within it, and the elimination of much that is worthwhile from the existing services. That's not our intention. The third programme is no isolated effort at culture. The three programmes will not be rigidly stratified. Rather, will they shade into each other. Music, plays and talks, for instance, will be found in each. But while the light programme might well play the waltzes from Der Rosenkavalier, and the home service do a live broadcast of an act from Covent Garden, the third programme would devote an evening to the whole opera. The difference is will be in approach, in treatment, and in emphasis. It's difficult to talk about raising public taste without sounding superior or governessy, but it's our purpose, and we shall see that no innovation of ours will weaken it. Experience has led us to believe, however, that you're never going to achieve that purpose by withholding popular material from the listener. And let's not forget that we have a duty to all our listeners. Nor will you do it by plunging him or her, all unsuspecting, from boogie-woogie to Bach. That approach only infuriates and alienates both sets of people. It creates animosities instead of sympathies. If we're to break down intolerance, we have to proceed with far more thought than that. Now I come to the third program itself. You've already heard or read, possibly too often, how it's intended to cater for the serious, attentive listener of all classes, how it will broadcast concerts, operas, plays, and other works of art in full, how, in order to make this possible, it will have no fixed points, and how it will be also experimental and strongly international. But no program can be justified merely on a statement of its aims. What matters is the program itself. Let's look at some of the broadcasts arranged for the third program, starting with music. About a third of the program's time will be given to music. None of it will be background listening. The sum of its parts will, over a period of time, give the listener a conspectus of classical and modern music of a range no broadcasting system has yet attempted. There will be symphony concerts every Thursday and Saturday evenings, the latter a long-standing need. Kodály and William Walton will both be conducting their own works this week. Charles Munsch, Nikolai Malko, Elisabeth Schumann, Szigeti are all coming. There will be a publicly performed chamber concert every Monday. And in the course of the next few months, we shall give in the third program carefully planned broadcasts of all the Mozart piano concertos, all the Mozart piano sonatas, all the Beethoven violin and piano sonatas and string quartets, Bach's well-tempered clavier in its entirety, all the major dramatic works of Purcell, all the piano works of Debussy, and some of Haydn's unpublished symphonies. The effort will be made to have one broadcast of a full opera every week. In drama, we're starting ambitiously with Shaw's Man and Superman in full, and we're arranging a Shaw festival in January. We shall do the Agamemnon of Aeschylus and Shakespeare's Troilus and Cressida, and we hope next summer to broadcast a complete cycle of all the historical plays of Shakespeare from Richard II to Richard III. Earlier this evening, Field Marshal Smuts's Reflections on World Affairs opened the third program's talks. Others to follow are Dean Ing, Desmond McCarthy, Dennis Johnston, a series by V.S. Pritchett on the Russian novelists, and four talks by Professor E.H. Carr on British foreign policy. An early and outstanding experiment in the treatment of world affairs will be the broadcasts we're going to devote on four consecutive evenings to John Hersey's report, based on accounts given to him by survivors, of the effects of the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima. This report, which filled a whole issue of the New Yorker, has achieved wide fame in the world of journalism. It's of great importance. We're going to try to transfer it to the medium of radio. But the list of third program arrangements is long. I've said nothing about features, or discussions, or poetry, or the visual arts, all of which will be covered, of course. But before I finish, I want to touch on two other matters. The first is the cooperation the BBC as a whole, and the third programme in particular, hopes that it will get from the authors, composers, poets, and others, both here and abroad. If broadcasting is to grow and develop and do its full work within the community, it must be a living thing. It must pioneer the present as well as prospect the past. It mustn't always be playing safe. It mustn't be afraid of an occasional failure. It must reflect the work of living as well as of dead artists. It must stimulate the new as well as sustain the old. And to do all this, it must have the help of the creative artists of today. The second matter is that of coverage. BBC coverages are generally higher than those of other countries. The home service is available to about 95% of the population. The coverage of the light programme is about the same figure, 95%. Had our original plan for the third programme remained possible, we should have opened tonight with about an 80% coverage and have built up from there. As it is, we have to start with nearly half the listening population uncovered. It's no use to repine, but we must try to repair. The problem isn't an easy one. But I want to make it clear tonight that our efforts will unceasingly be directed towards solving it. And while we will do all we can to improve the coverage on medium wave, we're pressing on with our plans to develop frequency modulation. And now I think the third program has been talked about enough. From now on, its works are there to justify it, or otherwise. If the principle behind it is right, then it may become one of the most significant steps in the development of broadcasting. For it's a pioneer effort, something new and ambitious. That it should have been decided on in the heat of a most deadly and devastating war, will, we hope, be seen abroad as but one example of British imagination. And that it should have been inaugurated tonight, within 14 months of the end of hostilities, as an evidence of national vigour.